the first questions for the first lecture this morning. Questions. I think Kinchas was the first.
Hi, this is Daniel from Hungary, and my question is, what sources contribute to the final uncertainty in the experimental measurement? What are the different sources of uncertainties, and how is the like final value calculated?
Okay, so this you mean for the measurement?
For the measurement, yeah.
Okay, so for the measurement. So this is a good question. So I will go back to the measurement page. So actually, I haven't performed the measurement, so I'm not an expert in this. So things are written in such a way that the measurement is really statistics dominated. Okay, so I think as far as I remember, the uncertainty here in the systematic uncertainty in the first run one measurement. So let me go back to this result here. Experimental measurement. Okay, so this is the average of the two numbers. The single number, the total error on the Fermi lab must be something like 0.5 parts per million. I guess if you divide this by square root of 2, you get about that. And of this, only 0.16 parts per million are systematic errors. Okay, so all of these measurements are statistics dominated, and that's why you can start averaging them in such a simple way. I think the magnetic field is known extremely well. So in terms of systematics, then I must say I have probably less knowledge of the detailed sources of systematics. If we go, okay, I know what the source is, of course. I mean, there's a magnetic field, then there's a measurement of the magnetic field and the inhomogeneities of the magnetic field, which is done with NMR probes, which are circulated through the beam line. Okay, so there's clearly going to be some sort of uncertainty associated with this. And then the beam has very complicated dynamics. Okay, it sort of pulses and oscillates, etc. So there's an uncertainty associated with this also. And these things are model, and they believe that they understand them well. Then in this ratio that gives a mu is designed in such a way that these other quantities here, the non-measured quantities, really contribute negligibly to the total uncertainty. So that's okay. More or less the situation. Maybe somebody here knows more details than I do.
What I know is that the analysis of run 2 and 3 is proceeding, and then the expected statistic uncertainty is going to be reduced by more than a factor of 2. And they're implementing a series of improvements to address the main systematic uncertainties. So also those sources will go down significantly. So I think the uncertainty is going to be very significantly reduced experimentally.
So you've taken some of my punchline tomorrow, but it's fine. So they had a problem, I know, in run one they had a problem with an electric RF cavity, I think, which was malfunctioning, and which, so they're, the systematic error which they're aiming for is 0.1 parts per million. In run one, it was 0.16 parts per million, and I think mostly due to these problems with this electric field. So as was just said, for run two, they're hoping to reach the design systematic uncertainty limits of 0.1 parts per million.
Luigi, so might be a very naive question, but I wonder whether it makes any sense to think that theoretical predictions for the value of g minus 2 could be systematically biased to the left. Why I'm asking this? Because we've seen in a previous lecture that, for example, the progress of the calculations of the Higgs cross section, you know, at the beginning were underestimated and then went up and up as, I mean, as the let's say, the progress is in the calculation. So I was just wondering whether this makes any sense to believe that this is systematic bias to the left, or this is already, if you want, robustly included in the current uncertainty.
Okay, so I guess by Higgs you mean going to higher orders. Here where you go to higher orders, it's mostly in QED, and things have been calculated to five loops, which is way beyond what you need actually for the muon g minus 2. So you go to five loops for the electron g minus 2. So there you can't expect any higher orders to contribute. I think there are estimates of the electroweak next to leading order calculation. As far as I know, they're small, but I can't really spit out the details right now. For the other contributions, they're non-perturbative. So there won't be something like adding an extra order or something like this, which could move the result. What one can do is reduce the uncertainties and increase the precision. But I don't think there's any reason to believe that that these values are biased.
Yeah, so assuming the for the hadronic vacuum polarization, the value ends up not in the white paper calculation, but at the lattice QCD calculation, mm-hmm. then you would have to understand the tension between the data-driven method and the lattice QCD, if I understand correctly. And in that case, what would be like the usual suspect or the would one either suspect that there's something wrong in one of the many data sets that's involved or the method itself, and are there efforts to step by step disentangle this, maybe like put in a lattice QCD calculation in a different sense? And okay, can you comment on that?
Yeah, this is a very good question on which I'm working on now. So it's easy to go from the R ratio to the lattice calculation. This is just a Laplace transform. To go from the lattice calculation to the spectrum, you have to undo a lattice transform. So it's an inverse lattice transform, which is essentially an ill-defined problem because we don't even have continuous functions on the lattice. So it's quite difficult to go in that direction. So tomorrow I will show you that there's some sort of intermediate quantity that one can compute relatively easy on the lattice and also in the R ratio, where there the tension between a lattice and an R ratio is even larger. It's close to 4 sigma. Okay, so there seems to be clearly something to understand there. So of course the lattice calculations are much more recent at this level of precision, so there could be something that we're all doing wrong. So even though we use different discretizations and slightly different methods, the setup is still quite similar. So maybe there's some aspect of the calculation we all think we understand and we just go ahead and do it and we don't understand. On the data side, these are difficult. These are very difficult measurements because you have to catch all these final states. So you reconstruct the spectrum state by state. There are photons flying around. You have to catch these photons, know how energetic they are. And there is some disagreement between some of the data sets. So I can show you some of this. I must have a plot here. So in particular, the two most precise data sets in this most important region disagree. So it's Chloe experiment and Babar. So here are, okay, so this is a contribution to a mu. I'm from a limited region of square root of S. Okay, so from 600 to 900 MeV. So this is, if you know hadronic physics, it's essentially the rho peak plus sum. Here are the results calculated with different data sets individually. And as you can see, between Babar and Chloe, there is quite a difference. Okay, and if you look at the difference, it's about 9 units, or 10 even units, and it's a 2.9 sigma effect. And 10 units, there are only 14 units in 10 to the minus 10 difference between the lattice calculation and the combination of all of these results. So here, yeah, it's actually so shown here. In other regions of square root of S, actually Chloe is larger than Babar, so there's some cancellations, and so that's why the final uncertainty on AMU doesn't really take into account this full spread here. But this has been taken into account in the analysis of the data, so there are people analyze the data, taking out the Chloe data set, taking out the Babar data set. You get a difference, and essentially they take the half the difference as an additional systematic error, and then they take the central value as the average as a central value. So this is included to some extent in the uncertainties in the data. Then of course there are all these issues of radiative correction, so you have to control these quite well. You have these measurements are made by radiative return. So what you have to do is collide E plus E minus for different values of the center of mass energies. Okay, and it's very difficult to build an accelerator where you can just tune a knob and switch the energy, because of course you have to change all the magnetic fields, etc. The systematics become different. So both Chloe and Babar use this a trick called the radiative initial state radiation. And so what they do is actually they let E plus and E minus collide, but they try to catch a photon emitted by either the initial E plus or E minus. And by measuring the energy of the photon, they know how much energy one of the two particles colliding lost. And then you can scan an energy from a maximum, which is the center of mass energy of the machine, all the way down to much lower energies. And so this is what they do. And this means really controlling initial state radiation and photons. So they do control for this, but you also rely some on Monte Carlo. And so these issues are not simple. So there are a number of possible sources. Or there could also be new physics in E plus E minus. So I was talking this morning. Sorry, I forget your first name. But okay, so you have a dark photon model, which could explain distortions of the spectrum, and might be able to reconcile actually the lattice calculation, which cannot have any new physics, and E plus E minus, which may be subject to new physics.
Hi. So I would like to check first. So from the theoretical side, the main reason for this discrepancy actually comes from the hadronic vacuum polarizations. Okay, so then for instance, if we would not construct models, if we would be interested in the models beyond the standard model, would you go into this direction, literally in this direction? And what is, in your opinion, like then the best model, which is like most interesting?
To explain possible new physics in E plus C minus.
Precisely.
So I think your type of model with a dark photon or some light particle which mixes with the photon is probably a good candidate, because of course you're annihilating E plus and E minus, you get a photon, and if you have something which mixes in with this, you're definitely going to get an effect. Mm-hmm. So in E plus C minus, I would say this. And the G minus 2, essentially, any model, any BSM model you write essentially gives you a contribution to G minus 2. And they're often quite large. But also, you need a relatively large large new physics effect to explain this difference, because to explain this difference, you have to explain an effect which is twice the electroweak correction. Okay, and so electroweak physics, of course, we know and we see. So you need something that we don't yet see, and that's sort of as close to us in some sense as the electroweak scale. So you typically have a few hundred GeV scale of new physics.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I was wondering, in fact, about this E plus E minus data. Do you think that, for instance, comparing the method of this radiative return with a direct method like the Novosibirsk approach could shed some light maybe on the difference in particular between Chloe and Babar? And a second somewhat related question about the hadronic vacuum polarization. Would it be possible from the lattice, from the lattice you compute the G minus 2, A mu, but would it be possible to compute directly the hadronic vacuum polarization to compare really what we compute using E plus E minus data, because maybe this could be interesting, although we can infer from your lattice value, the hadronic, your hadronic vacuum polarization, but to have just a direct lattice computation of the hadronic vacuum polarization.
Yes, okay. So the first question was the fixed energy experiments.
Yes,
So for the moment, their precision is not up to level, yeah. But we're expecting new results. They've been imminent for a while, CMD3, mm-hmm. And that should actually help perhaps resolve the situation. And what might happen, though, is that it somehow sits in between with large enough errors that it touches both, and then we don't really know. So the computing the hadronic vacuum polarization, so this is actually, I have a student in the audience who's working on the Adler function, computing the Adler function directly on the lattice using the same setup that we have now. We've already computed the running of alpha, which is essentially the hadronic vacuum polarization, in two regions from 0 to 1 GeV and from 1 to 10 GeV. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a finite running of alpha. And so here I can even show you the picture. So you do see an excess at low. So let me see if I can find this quickly. Okay, so at some point there was a question as to whether people started saying our result contradicted alpha QED at MZ because we have this excess, and if you somehow multiplied this excess we have in G minus 2, you assume that it holds for the whole spectrum, the same percentage, etc., you would get this huge violation or huge contradiction at the electroweak scale for alpha. So we wanted to show that really what we see is a low energy in the space-like region, really a low energy excess, and it doesn't carry up to much higher energies. Okay, so what is shown here, let me look here because I will see better, this is essentially the running of alpha. Here it's from 0 to 1 GeV, here it's from 1 to 10 GeV, then from 10 to 100 GeV squared, 100 to 1,000, and then all the way up to MZ. The pink points are what we obtained, so we took KNT's data, KNT's compilation of data, and then we added perturbation theory. So these pink bars are the running of alpha between these regions. And so to get the running from 0 to mz, you just have to sum these bars, okay, and you get this this running. So what is shown on top of this is our calculation from 0 to 1 Jev squared and from 1 to 10 Jev squared. And here what is shown is a difference to the R ratio approach. So as you can see, our result for running from 0 to 1 Jev squared is about 1 unit out of 40 higher here, so it is a bit higher. There's been a recent calculation by Mainz, so in 2022, where they find an even higher result. Perhaps they had some problem with scale setting. This paper has not yet been refereed. But so you do see an excess at low space-like region. But then if you go up to higher, from one to 10, you see that the lattice data comes down. So it seems to be really an excess concentrated in the low space-like region. Of course, when you translate this to time-like, it spreads because you have this dispersion relation. But it's more towards the low part of the spectrum. It's not the high part of the spectrum.
Interesting. Thank you.
Sure. Avanish. So at some point you showed a ton load of diagrams in QED,
mm-hmm.
and you say that they've been calculated up to 5 loops. Now I wonder, do you know how they've been calculated? I guess not with Feynman parameters, right?
Okay, so the details of these calculations to 5 loops, I must say I don't know. Maybe somebody is more expert in this than me. I don't know if, Eric, you've ever looked at these QED calculations. I'm not exactly sure how they regularize. I'm not exactly sure how they parametrize. They reduce things to some set of master integrals, so you don't compute every diagram individually. But then maybe, Eric, you might want to say.
Well, not much. I just know that the highest order, I think they do semi-numerically, because also their analytical results methods run out.
Yeah. In fact, even I think starting at alpha cubed, they have to do things numerically. So they evaluate these integrals probably through some sort of Monte Carlo phase space integral through some sort of Monte Carlo process. But the precise way, you would have to go to the paper.
Okay, thank you.
The question on the uncertainties. In the various measurements that you have shown of the Hadronic plus and minus show that the overall chi-squared is bad. That points to think that at least a few of the experiments aim to measure the same thing.
Mm.
If that they are not statistically compatible means that some of them have underestimated the uncertainty. That, by the way, is a common thing that happens. For example, the procedure of PDG under those conditions is to arbitrarily multiply all the errors by a certain factor.
By the square root of the
factor. The question, how this is treated in the calculation of G minus 2? Because that not treating that properly might lead to underestimate the overall error.
Okay, so this is a very good question. So they do apply the PDG factor in local bins. So there's a local PDG factor. This is a chi-squared over NDOF, the square root. You just multiply the errors in such a way that you reduce the chi-squared to 1. So this is taken into account locally. It's also, as I indicated, taken into account the total difference, so the sort of this overall difference in a large region between Chloe and Babar. This difference as a whole is taken as a systematic error. So they are very careful in doing things. Yeah, so they blow up errors locally a la PDG style. And some groups are more conservative than others. Also, they don't, some groups, Some groups believe blindly the correlation matrices that are given by the experiments. Others only believe them in certain regions. You know, they don't believe that a measurement at 10 JeV can affect a measurement at 1 JeV, etc., even though things may be somewhat correlated. So they, as far as I understand, a lot of care has been taken into not making an overly precise prediction.
Hi, I'm Gabor. When you were talking about the hadron contributions, you showed dispersion theory relations. Does it make any sense to do operator product expansion there or QCD sum rule calculations?
Certainly you could. You could do some sort of a vector meson dominance model, you know, just put in a row plus a continuum or something like this and evaluate the vacuum polarization and also the A mu. The point is, though, it's hard to control uncertainties in these approaches because it depends on how you parameterize your sum rule, etc. So initial calculations, I'm sure, you know, in the 60s or 70s, you would put just put the delta function for the rho, so something like this, or some bright Wigner and estimate this. But now, because we're trying to aim for such precision, sub-percent precision, it doesn't really make much sense to exploit this this path. Of course, if you want to get an order of magnitude idea or get an idea, this is a very good way to do things, and you'll probably end up quite close to the correct result, but you won't have a 0.4 uncertainty that you could defend.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
No further questions? If no further questions, we thank the speaker.
Okay, thank you.